Today's podcast is sponsored by Barrage Coffee. It's veteran-owned and operated. Can't thank enough of them for their sponsorship. Today's guest is a 26-year combat medic, recruiter, also founder and president of Project Die Hard, Inc. He is a father and a husband, Ryan Gibson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
No problem.
I also got my co-host, Sam. He did a podcast last week and excited to have him on as a new co-host. So welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Brian, I like to start the show off by digging into your background, you know, where you grew up, what led you to join the military. If you can kind of give the audience a little description of, you know, where you grew up. And
well, I was born into a Navy family. I was born in Traverse City, Michigan, because my old man was doing Great Lake detail. Moved around, graduated high school in Seattle, Washington, where I joined the United States Army at age 17. Everybody goes, why didn't you join the Navy? Right? Well, my father put us on this Tiger cruise one summer, and I realized I like looking at trees, not ocean. Right? Joined the Army at 17, combat, 91 Alpha combat medic. The goal was to hop in, get my college money, and hop out. That was the goal. Well, 26 years, 8 months, 14 days later, boom. I've been in the 24th Infantry Division, 2nd Armored Cavalry Division, 1st Infantry Division, Desert Storm. Then took a break in service, came back in, deployed with the 744th MP Battalion, got injured, came back, had a cool sergeant major, threw me on recruiting duty so I could finish out my time. Good. You know, everybody goes, why did you go to recruiting? Well, because I couldn't physically be a combat medic anymore, and I had like 12 years in, so recruiting, you can have a dead man profile and keep moving.
Yeah. No, it makes sense, man. Go ahead, Sam.
All right, man. Hey, Sergeant Gibson, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
All right. Well, I noticed on your profile or the little bio you sent that you got your son has a ministry.
No, my son followed in my footsteps, joined the Army, right? Okay. Deployed. That's a whole nother thing. Let's see. 1st Infantry Division, right?
Right.
Grandfather, World War II, Omaha. Uncle, Vietnam. Me, Desert Storm. My son, Iraqi Freedom. So we got 4 generations that served with the Big Red One. We're kind of proud of that.
I must have.
But my son got wounded. Traumatic brain injury. He came back. So we're his caregiver. We finally got him moved literally 200 yards up the street in his own house. Okay, so we're slowly getting him back up on his feet. The ministry is mine.
Oh, okay. That's Project Die Hard.
That's Project Die Hard. 11 years ago, I self-medicated. Well, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm not going to lie. 11 years ago, I was in a deep, dark, dark place, and up to the point where I had a 45 in my mouth. And then I got
what
a
led
phone.
To that?
what led to that was,
yeah, like for the viewers that wouldn't know, what led for you to get in that depression and led you to putting a 45 in your mouth? Because a lot of people don't understand it and why, and what leads you to want to go down that path? You know, what leads to all this?
Hopelessness. Just, dude, I was a combat medic, okay? I love my grunts. I love all that. But let's be honest, who sees the worst of war? Right? When they all get hit, who do they call for?
Yeah, the medics.
All that just compiled and compiled and compiled. And I just felt hopeless. I felt useless. I felt, you know, that. It just, it's that depression. It's that when you go, 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 and now you're not, right? I used alcohol to bury the nightmares, all the bad things. And that just led down that path and to that point. But I got a phone call from a buddy of mine that a fellow veteran, he was going through some tough times. And I guess it was the medic in me, right? What's up, bro? What can I do for you? What are you doing tomorrow? I literally had no plans. He invited me down to this little church in Paducah in the old Finkel building. And this is where I know God has a sense of humor. He started a biker church in a pink building. Right? But the Free Spirit Biker Church, Pastor Dennis Lawrence, great people. I went down with him. They were raffling off a Harley. You know, he didn't do crowds, so I said, yeah, I'll go with you. He saw something was wrong with me. And everybody said, oh, he took the time to talk to you. No, he took the time to listen. And then he brought me back to life. I was on the security team at the church. I was very involved in the church. And then 6 years ago, I get a phone call from the wife of one of my best buds. Three tours together, you know, a true brother. Doc, what do I do? What do I do? I'm like, take a breath. I need to know what's going on. He's hanging in the garage. That's when I said something more had to be done. Something better had to be done. And that led to Project Die Hard. Our goal with Project Die Hard is to give a safe, secure place for a veteran to come for a day, a weekend, a week, a month, up to a year. Whether they just need to come and talk, or if we've already been networking, we got skill training set up, therapy set up. Just for 5 years, I've been networking. We started raising funds for 114 acres here in West Kentucky. Great. And then good old 2020 hit. During that time, the Veterans of Foreign Wars did a story on me and the mission, which led to a local television station, WSIL-TV, Channel 3, out of Marion, Illinois, to do a story on us that led to the Haven of Love Christian Daycare to call and say, are you willing to come up and talk about your mission? Of course, I'll go anywhere and talk about my mission, right? He takes me through this 20 acres, this 10,000 square foot building, Now, mind you, I got 10 pounds of titanium holding my spine together, so walking through the woods is not one of my best things to do, right?
Yeah.
And it was July, so it was nice and humid and hot and the ticks. And I was like, I don't play this anymore. But hey, we get all through the building, and he looks at me. He goes, brother, can you use this for your mission? And I went, well, of course we can, but there's no way we can afford this. He goes, I didn't ask that. Can you use it? I said, yeah. He goes, good. We're donating it to you.
Hmm. Awesome.
Ain't it?
Yeah. Right? That's amazing, actually.
It is. Okay. So now the original plan of 114 acres is still there, but it's not taking precedence because we now have 20 acres, a 10,000 square foot building that, when completed, will house 12 single veterans. And again, this is what sets us apart: two veterans with their families for up to a year.
Can I interject right here for a second?
Feel free.
First of all, I love your story, and I'm glad God blessed you in abundant ways. But I want to shift focus to the medical community outside of ministry. Me and Alan and a lot of other friends that I have, we all kind of struggle with some similar issues. Maybe not as bad as what your guys are going through. But what do you think of the medical community's response to PTSD?
My view on it is, well, okay, I got 10 pounds of titanium, right? And the whole medical community, it can do a better job. But like the VA in particular, I'm not saying they're a bad thing because they're tied up with bureaucracies and all that policy. But I'm in constant pain. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And their procedure is, would you like this narcotic? Would you like this narcotic? Mm-hmm. What part of addiction issues, right? Don't you understand? Mm-hmm. The whole medical system has their, if this is wrong, do this. If this is wrong, do this. Okay. Again, this is what's going to set us different. We don't want to take any government money because I don't want people to come in and say, this is a recognized therapy or this isn't. What might help you, Sam, may not help Alan. Right? Mm-hmm. So why do we bunch them all into that same category?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As I like to say, and you guys will probably get it, the viewers, I'm going to say 50-50. Sam, if you're our resident and you come to me and say, Doc, I think underwater basket weaving will help me sleep better. Right? My only goal is to go, okay, how do we do it safely? You know, that's that. But did that answer? You want a little more detail? It's,
well,
the medical system, like, puts them all in a,
yeah,
boom. Go ahead. Well,
they tend to throw medicine at everything instead of actually talking to you. I know I can't speak for the VA across the country, but for me, every time I go in, the only question I get asked is, do you need any refills?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's medicine thrown at me 24 hours a day. And for me, it was like, I'm on my third or fourth psychologist now because they keep quitting. Like, is anybody going to talk to me? Oh, we have groups for that. I didn't say groups. I said, are you going to talk to me? You're the one that's got the PhD. You're the one who's going to be helping me. You're the one who needs to know more than anyone else. And yet we've never had a conversation about my condition. And the reason I feel like the reason why, and I could be wrong, is they don't want to start the PTSD conversation, period. Because it's a money issue. It's a claim issue. And I've actually been told by two psychologists, I'm not making this up, I'm telling you the truth, we don't deal with PTSD. We treat the symptoms, but we don't deal with PTSD. If you would like to file a claim, you're more than welcome to.
Good point. Good point. I bring this analogy to this. Let's go back to ancient days, the Roman Empire, right? Remember those guys? Mm. Right? When a centurion made it to the end of their career, if they made it there, right? The Rome would give them 10 acres of land out in the suburbs, out where they were just conquered. Because Rome knew, hey, let's not have a bunch of disgruntled people that we train to fight and kill people here in Rome, right? Mm-hmm. But in that same thing, when they made it to the end, they got a medallion that they wore.
Yep.
Everybody in the Roman Empire, a Roman citizen, and it wasn't law, right? It wasn't a law. But when they saw that medallion, they'd have a place to sleep and a hot meal. Because the citizens of Rome knew what these guys did. So they could live as the citizen of Rome. Since the beginning of time, every nation that has stood up an army has taught men, now women, to fight, to kill, to do these things. What no government anywhere in the world has ever figured out is how do you untrain them?
You don't. You can't.
You don't. You can't.
There's a quote that says, once you're a warrior, nothing else will do.
Yeah. Okay. So again, we have to focus from not forgetting that we're warriors, but we have to focus the fight in a different avenue. Mine is for my brothers and sisters. Okay? That's my avenue. That's my therapy. But that's where my warrior spirit and my warrior drive comes into play. Mm-hmm. Okay? I do not take a salary. Okay, I don't have to. And even if I had to, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably take another job. But this is where I get a lot of heartache out there is I stick to my guns on, I don't take a salary, none of my board take a salary. We lost a $500,000 grant because we don't have paid employees. Figure that one out. So somebody said, oh, you take a salary, donate it back. Solid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are faith-based. Okay? I looked into my Bible, backwards, forwards. Nowhere in my Bible does it say to lie, cheat, or steal to get ahead. We don't just do things to check a block. It's got to have a purpose.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, who's up?
No, I'm taking it all in, man. Trying to process.
Yeah.
Now, so everything's donated. You said 10 acres of land, 10,000 square
feet. Oh, 20 acres of land.
20 acres. Okay. And where's this located at?
Macanda, Illinois.
And say a veteran is wanting to go, is it How long do you think it'll be before you get it established to where veterans can come in and use the facility?
Well, once again, this is why I'm so grateful for you to have me on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I get asked that all the time. We already have a waiting list. But again, I don't take a salary.
Yeah.
We do nothing but by donations. I turned down $2 million.
Why would you do that?
Oh, he had this one major stipulation I couldn't get across. I couldn't get over. Every veteran that comes will get a Bible and a devotional. Whether or not they use it or not, that's not up to me. That's up to God, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they will get it.
So what if a veteran comes in that don't believe in God? Are you going to turn them away? Or are you going to bring them
in? No. No.
No, I'm just asking. I mean, there's veterans out there that don't believe in God.
And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But when that veteran comes, they're going to have to understand that, hey, you know what? We're not going to browbeat you. We're not going to beat you up with it. But we are a faith-based organization. We're going to be talking about God. If you don't like that, you don't have to attend the Bible studies. You don't have to dive in and partake.
Yeah.
I've lost money from Christian organizations because if I get a veteran that is a Muslim and they say, hey, I would like to invite this guy to do a service for the Muslims. Okay, come on. Yes, I'm a Christian. That doesn't mean I hate everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially my brothers and sisters.
No, it makes sense. You know, I'm just trying to clear the airway with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, look, we're not going to beat them up. Again, I know for a fact you don't beat somebody up to get your point across, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I didn't know if, you know, no. there is veterans that...
That don't believe, and I got it.
Yeah.
But they still need the help, don't they?
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
They need better help than 90 days in a psych dormitory ward. Or a psych ward, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there could be a lot more done. You know, I don't know what it is, what it could be, but there could be more. I mean, I work at the VA and I see all the guys on the ninth floor and, you know, it's more like a prison than anything. You know, they treat I wouldn't say they're treated like crap. They get meals and everything, but I think some of them just play the game to get the money. You know what I mean? And that's just my beliefs. That's my thoughts. And I'll leave it at that. But I think some of them just play the game.
Well, could be. Well, when a veteran comes to our facilities, they're not going to be able to play the game.
Yeah.
Okay. One big thing. There's no drugs and no alcohol allowed on our facilities. And when I mean no drugs, I mean illegal drugs,
yeah.
Right? No alcohol allowed in our facilities. Everybody goes, well, why not? Well, that's a crutch. Right? Mm-hmm. Is it not? So a lot of my brothers and sisters are fighting with that temptation. So why not? Hey, here's a safe, secure place where you're not going to be tempted.
Okay, so here's a scenario. In a lot of the states, I don't know about where Illinois, but some medical marijuana is that if they're subscribed it for their PTSD or whatever, are they allowed to have it or no? Or that's something to look into?
That's something we are looking into. Okay, I'm not gonna lie, we are looking into it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more into that discussion than what I can say locked down right here. That's a really heavy discussion within our organization.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, because the federal government still says it's illegal.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, again, that's a big, big conversation.
Yeah.
And no matter what way, which way we go on it, we'll make sure that we're solid in the decision and be able to defend that decision.
Gotcha.
Sergeant Gibson, I got a good question for you. How do you get soldiers to stop isolating and actually open up about their deep wounds? Because a lot of times soldiers don't talk about their emotions.
Well, again, just by being there and being a listener, right? If I sent you the schematic for the FOB, right? Mm-hmm. Of what we're going to be doing to it. There's no coffee pots, no hot plates, no kitchens in any of the rooms. It's a little bit sneaky of me. You're not going to come and self-isolate. I can't force you out of your room, but you're going to get hungry. You have to come to the cafeteria to eat.
Okay.
It's that safe, secure place is where people are going to be able to go, you know what? I can talk about this. Because if I'm on there, I've been through it, right?
Yeah.
I can understand, brother, where you've been. Because I've been there. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the key. To be able to sit and talk about it. Now, in that same retrospect, these are the nightmares. These are the things. We got triggers, right? Okay, so there's ways to learn how to identify how a trigger is going to hit when a trigger is coming on. And then there's things you can do to, you're not going to get rid of it, but you can control it.
Right.
But the first step is to understand that, yeah, that we've seen bad things. And it's okay to talk about it. Mm-hmm. One of my triggers is little one, two, three-year-old kids screaming, right? Why? I'm deployed. Vehicle-borne IED comes rolling down the street, detonates right next to an orphanage. What does a medic do? Run in and do my job, right?
Yeah.
But I buried that so deep because I had to do my job. Now it hits me when I hear children crying and screaming. Mm-hmm. But so, I've learned to, okay, I cannot identify it. I can do what I've been taught that works for me. I'm not saying it's going to work for you, but to minimize the after effects of that. You had a question. Come on, Alan.
No. I mine's different. I mean, I don't, for me, I don't like when my little boy screams. I just hate them high pitched screams. You know what I mean? Just, it irritates me. It pisses me off. And it's, I don't know if it's a trigger or what, but that's something that I deal with. You know what I mean? I can't stand loud pitch noises. It just, I don't say it startles me. Just, it gets, I don't know. It's just something in me that just drives me nuts. But
that's most people when those high pitch screams. I mean, come on, if you scream like a girl, it's going to get to the nerves. Those high pitch things just do it. Come on, Sam. You raised your hand. What's the question?
Oh, no. I was just saying me too.
Yeah. Look.
I can't stand them.
Yeah.
Well, I had a discussion. We have a casino right up here in Illinois because they allow gambling on the river. Mm-hmm. And I had a discussion because part of our thing for a veteran is to help them find a job after they're done with us, right? To get them set up. And their guy goes, I can't hire veterans.
Why?
And that's what I asked. I said, why can't you? He goes, I don't know. I said, well, what jobs are you trying to put them in? Oh, dealers, blah, you know, I'm like, excuse me. You're going to put a good person that has seen combat, right? So you're in a place that's confusing to start with because they don't want you to leave, right? You got all the flashing lights and all the loud noises and bangs and clangs. And you think a veteran's going to purposely put himself into that? He goes, I never thought of that. I said, you want to hire veterans, put them up in the little things watching the people.
Security.
Yeah.
That's my job.
Do you work at a casino?
No, I work at a hospital.
Okay, but
I am security.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying about this guy with the casino, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people want to help, but they just don't grasp it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. I kind of want to ask you some more of the military questions that I normally ask. What was the most interesting school you attended while you were in the military, and why?
The most interesting school would probably be Twelve Bravo.
You got to explain it to the people that have never been in the military. Okay,
combat engineer. I was at the 24th, and this was okay. I'm going to show my age. This is before the Army got computerized. Okay, I lost a bet. Because I was attached to an engineer unit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to 12 Bravo school.
How was it?
Fort Lawson, the Wood. It was great. I was E4 at the time. So the drill sergeants, I didn't go through the base. I just went through the school, right?
Yeah.
Those drill sergeants, man. E4? You're marching them to chow. You're doing this. You schmucks. I thought E4 going to a school, I'd just chill out. Nope. Nope. But I would say that was the most interesting school just because of demo, right? Learning the demolitions, that was just downright cool, man. Get to blow things up. What guy doesn't love that?
Yeah, absolutely. I love blowing shit up. All right, Sam, you're up, brother.
All right, man. I see that you went to Operation Desert Shield and Iraqi Freedom.
Yeah, I got to invade the same country twice.
Okay, cool. So you were on two different operations.
Well, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, right? Yeah. I was a young little private.
Uh-huh.
Iraqi Freedom, I was a section sergeant.
Having two deployments like that under your belt, how did you deal with coming back to America and seeing the normalcy of everything? Did it really get to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, those are the two that I tap. I've got other ones out there, too, right, that we just don't talk about because the government said, you don't talk about these. Mm-hmm. Got it. I'm just going to say there that when Nancy Reagan said there was a war on drugs back there in the 80s, she wasn't lying. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah. But when you come back from war, look, you're never going to fit back in.
Mm-hmm.
What is now our normal isn't society's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Driving down the road and you see the suspicious package on the side. I don't know about you, but my heart rate still goes up. Right? Why? You spend 18 months downrange driving down MSRs where the dead dog could blow up and kill you. You get a little hypervigilant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I used to, I guess it was more when I first got back, I would be more aware. Now I don't even pay attention to it, to be honest with you. I think my situational awareness has kind of wore off a little bit, but, you know, I don't go around. Now, if I hear a loud bang, I'll jump, yeah. Or, like, if the lip on a bridge is too big and I, boom, I'll jump a little bit. But all that other stuff, I kind of, you know what I mean? It's to the wayside, you know what I mean?
But, again, I'm the same way. But it all depends on the situation, where it's at, what it's doing, is whether or not. But, you know, it's that.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first came back, I got no speeding tickets. Choke a horse, because downrange, what was it? Speed is life, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But again, this is what our facilities are for, is a place to understand that, you know what, you don't got to do this, you don't got to do that.
Yeah.
You can do this, you can do that. And this is going to be in a non-judgmental, safe place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got another question for you. You know, and people want to hear this kind of stuff. That's why I ask it. While as a medic, what was the worst combat injury you had to assess and help on the battlefield?
Sudden amputation of both legs and the right arm.
Mm. Damn. There you have it. That's pretty heavy. You know,
that was the worst.
So what's kind of the process? Because I know a guy who lost his leg and an arm. You know, he's a son of a good friend of mine. You know, what's kind of the process of how you go about doing that? I know you tourniquet it off and blah, blah, blah. But for the viewers that want to know this kind of stuff, they're interested in it. They're intrigued by it. What's kind of the process?
The process on a sudden amputation is tourniquet, stop the bleeding. Okay, that's the first and foremost.
Yep.
Okay, stop the bleeding, right? You have a finite amount of blood in your body, as I used to teach my medics. The bleeding will stop one or two ways. They're going to run out or you're going to stop it.
Yep.
If they run out, you're no longer needed, right? Boom. So you tourniquet off. Now, mind you, you got to look at the whole situation, what's going on. This guy here, I did two neck sticks, one on each side, and I took my BP cups, and I was forcing fluid.
Yeah.
Just to keep his system going. I got to say, we had a kick butt dust off pilot. We're still engaged, and he landed to get that guy out.
No, that's awesome.
Okay. But again, it's, you know, yeah, that's the worst gory thing I want to say, but
yeah,
you know, there's just whole other things in the medical side.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a small portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nice. The guys that come to the aid station, doc, I'm missing my wife.
Well, get over it.
In a nutshell, but we did it a little bit more. You know, look, I am not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. That's not my gig.
I don't even think it's their gig for that. It's just toughen the hell up and drive on with a hard on. You know what I mean?
Well, once again, that's our everybody facilities.
Everybody misses their families. You know, it's not uncommon. You know, it's just, you know, are you talking about in war, or are you talking about back in civilian life? Because in war, you know, suck it up, Sally. You know what?
Oh yeah,
everybody
yeah.
misses their family.
Yeah, got it. We're downrange, but you know, I've had other downrange guys come in off and op, going, doc, I don't know how to process this.
Process you what? Know? Being away?
No. Their buddy that just was KIA'd.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I thought we were still talking about missing the wives.
No. That's just Mark Schnicks. You're downrange at suck it up, buttercup, right?
Exactly.
But there's that. And again, yeah. Our facilities, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a senior non-commissioned officer. I'm going to empathize with you and I'm going to understand you. And I'm not going to be a drill sergeant, but our facilities are the tough love variant. Got it. You went, you saw. You're having troubles right now, but you have to want this.
Yeah.
That's why I said there's no freeloaders. Every veteran that comes, every 30 days, there's a review process. Mm-hmm. If you're not making progress to better yourself, right? Sorry, I already have a waiting list. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes, well, that's mean and heartless. No, it's not. There's people, there's our brothers and sisters out there that want to get better.
Yeah. So what would the board review be like? If I was sitting in front of you and I'm in your deal, what would it be like?
Well, if you come to the board, first things first, right? Even before when you come in, you're going to sign a thing that says, I understand, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's rules that are going to be in place that you violate. That's an automatic. You're gone. Right. We come from a structured life. We're not going to be super structured, but we're going to keep some structure there.
Yeah.
So you come in and you just think, hey, I'm not going to do a therapy. I'm not going to go to this class where it shows me how to start a business. You know, you're just going to sit there and take everything and put nothing back. Well, no.
Yeah.
Every 30 days. Okay. You come in. If you make it to that review process, you're going to get a warning. Hey, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So you have 30 days to fix it.
So
there's no third chance. You know what I mean? There's no three strikes, you're out.
Yeah.
You've got 30 days to fix it.
So in this process, are you helping them try to get jobs?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I got electricians, plumbers, carpenters, welders, all lined up, willing to come and teach veterans a skill.
Yeah.
Okay. That's part of it. Nothing against my grunts.
We know it all, man. We know how to do it all.
Yeah, but there's really not a big call to clear buildings and throw hand grenades out here in the civilian world, is there?
Yeah, we can do it all, man.
I know you can't, but but that's it. We're going to be teaching skills.
Okay. If you get a female? What kind of jobs you got lined up for them? You know what I mean? You got people coming in for them, females as well? I mean, you just named carpenter, electrician. I don't know too many.
And why can't females do that? If that's.
I'm just saying, 90% of women are not carpenters. You know what I mean?
Oh, look, I got it.
I'm just asking you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do you have in place for them?
Well, let's see. If a veteran wants to learn a skill, right? We got to find out what they're interested in. And then I figure out how do we get it and put it in place?
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, brother, this isn't the first thing we got to do is find that one person out there that, I'll be honest, got $1 million they ain't doing nothing with and doesn't want to get famous or put a lot of stipulations. They just want to help.
Yeah.
Again, we ask people to go to our website, become a $22 a month patron. Mm. Now, whether you give $22 a month or $22,000 a month, every patron has the same right. You get to come to any facility and see where your money's going. But I throw a caveat on that. When you show up, bring work gloves and muck boots. Because there's always going to be something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Somebody asked, so you'd make a person that gives you $22,000 dig a ditch? I said, if the ditch needs dug.
Yeah.
But I'll be right there with them.
No, I like it, man. I'm just trying to pick your brain a little bit. You know,
go ahead. Somebody asked me, what do I want out of Project Die Hard? And I started with the answer, helping my brother. He goes, no, what do you want? I want to be able to go to any facility, because we're putting one of these in every state, and take a blacksmithing class or art therapy class or do a weekend getaway. And none of my brothers and sisters know who and what I am. I'm just another broke down veteran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not here to get rich. I'm not here to get famous. Mm-hmm. I'm here to help my brothers and sisters. I wish I had the funds to get this first facility up and running.
Yeah.
I've already had to sell my motorcycle to keep this mission going. Okay, when I say we are a true nonprofit, I'm not kidding. We are a true nonprofit.
All right, Sam, you got a question?
Yeah, I have one last question for you. What would you say to an 18, 19-year-old person getting ready to enlist? What would your advice be to them?
Mouth shut, ears open. learn. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're serving your country. Great. If they're enlisting, that's what I'm going to tell them. Ears open, mouth shut.
Yeah.
Okay. If they're thinking about it, it's real simple. We are Americans, are we not?
Yep.
Okay. It's your duty to serve this country in one aspect or another, whether it's in the military, whether it's volunteering at the VA, whatever it's volunteering at the hospital, making this country better. That's everybody's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
To me, serving in the military gets you a little bit higher on the, hey, you're a good person scale. But I'm a little biased because every male in my family, if you can physically do it, you will serve at least one tour. That's just the thing in my family.
Yeah.
Say, my grandfather, bless his soul, Thanksgiving was always a treat, right?
Mm-hmm.
My sister married this dude. Great dude. Doctor, right? Mm-hmm. But never put on a uniform. Guess where he sat at the Thanksgiving dinner? At the kiddie table.
That's kind of rambunctious.
No, that was my grandfather. If you didn't put on a uniform, right? And serve you. Look, man, he lost a testicle.
Not for everybody.
Oh, I got it. I mean, he lost a testicle on Omaha. So I'm lucky to be here.
Yeah. But, I get it. My whole family's the same way, man. We've been in every war.
Yeah. But, it's, you know, that's just our thing.
You know,
I mean, I'm not that bad, but you got to think it was kind of comical. You know, here's this professional dude.
Could you imagine if every male in this country served the military? Just think real hard about every one of them.
What kind No.
Look, you see what I'm getting at? You see what I'm getting at?
No.
Look. A lot of beta males out there.
Look. Somebody asked, oh, they should bring the draft back. No.
Well, we're still in the draft. We just didn't. We don't use it. You know what I mean?
Okay. The draft is still there, yes. But I don't know about you, but I did 26 years. My job, my profession was a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I got very good at it.
Yeah.
You know, some people become architects. I became a soldier.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's good at it. Someone's always better at something. You know what I mean?
But going downrange, because I've had that. I just doing this for college money. Well, you're earning it now, aren't you?
Yep. Agreed. You know, and a lot of people join the military just for college, and there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it. Serve honorably.
Mm-hmm.
Do your duty and go.
Yep. I got another. Where do you see Project Die Hard in 5 years?
Bob Rush up and running, Fort Hope up and running, and getting ready to put another FOB in another state.
Awesome.
That's where I see it. But I need your listeners and your followers' help.
Yeah.
Okay. Become that monthly patron.
Yep.
Spread our mission. Let people know that we exist so we can find that one person that has the resources to literally help.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Last question, and we'll let you go for the day. What's your thoughts on what's going on in Afghanistan right now?
My thoughts in Afghanistan is, because I'm a history buff, is no country has ever conquered Afghanistan using violence, right? Four presidents, could everything have been done better? Yes. But to my brothers and sisters that went there and did it, you did your job, right? I had this discussion the other day. When we deploy, we're not fighting for apple pie, right?
Yep.
I'm fighting for the person to the left and to the right of me. There you go. We lost brothers and sisters over there. But that's war. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you served honorably, you did what you did. Don't take what politicians do as a sign of you failed, because you didn't. I got in that other conversation. I was a professional soldier. As a professional soldier that has seen combat, if you want to talk out your problems, I'm all for it. Right? Talk till you're blue in the face. But when you break the glass and you let us loose, let us do our job.
Yeah.
Because that's what we know how to do.
Yeah, I agree.
That's all I'm saying on that.
No, it was good, man. Now, if people want to go to your website, can you tell them what the website is so if they want to donate or get in contact with you?
ProjectDieHard.org is our website. We're on Facebook at ProjectDieHard22. Mm-hmm. Like, follow, share the page, because that's the only way we're going to grow. I will not spend $10.2 million on a 30-second Super Bowl commercial.
No.
Now, another veteran nonprofit did that this last year. I'm not going to mention names, but they're out there.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez.
When I say we're a nonprofit, I mean we're a nonprofit.
$10.2 million, you could have done a lot with that to help veterans instead of wasting it.
Well, how about a veteran nonprofit CEO making $720,000 a year in salary?
Sounds like Wounded Warrior Project.
They're at 283.
Jeez.
and he's a retired three-star admiral.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-mm-mm.
So when I say you want to help a true veteran nonprofit, projectdieheart.org. And whether you give $22 a month or $22,000 a month, you know that that funds are going to help veterans. Mm. I'm not ashamed about it. That's what I talk about all the time. I get slammed. You're giving us a bad name. How am I giving you a bad name? Have you looked in the mirror? I've been told you got to do this, you got to do that to make your nonprofit successful. Well, just because everybody's doing it doesn't make it right.
Yeah. Oh, I think what you're doing is good. I think it'll break through. You know, it's going to be trying times. There's going to be good times, but, you know, it'll finally eventually conquer, you know what I mean? And it'll get rolling and going. And
well, again, this is why, brother, I appreciate being on your show.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Alan, Sam, look, your brothers now have seen me, talked to me, right?
Yep.
Can you tell that it's a real deal?
Yeah.
That's my question to you guys. Is this a real deal?
Yeah.
Then help share the mission. Tell people, hey, you give money to this, you know where it's going.
Yep. Yeah, plus I'll put the in the description, I'll put your links and the Facebook page and stuff like that also.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah. That's all I can ask. Everybody says on that timeline, the faster we raise $800,000 to get this building back to code, the faster Forward Operating Base Rush will be up and running.
Mm. Gotcha. Well, Brian, cool. It was good having you on. Appreciate you sharing your story. Sam, thanks for being my co-host. Can't thank you all enough for coming on and sharing your story, Brian. It was good. And hopefully people will get on your website, feel patriotic to donate, and it's for a good cause. And I appreciate you coming on, man.
Hey, brother, I thank you for the help.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Y'all stay safe. If you need to talk, reach out. That's about all I can offer right now, but I'll talk to anybody, any brother or sister that needs to talk.
Yep.
So
same here. Reach out.
Reach out. Yep.
All right, man. Well, have a good day.
Die Hard 6 out.